So about, I don't know, 4 or 5 weeks ago, I had a group at my house, and there was a young man there who created a space that was so profound for me that it changed the way I looked at life in that moment. Because one of my very favorite things is to have the feeling that I'm privileged to witness how someone else interacts with life. And that's how I felt in that moment. So I want to tell you the story. Val's heard it 15 times now, but she's tolerant. Perhaps others of you have heard it as well, but this young man's name is Thomas. And Thomas is probably in his early 30s. I'm not sure exactly how old he is, but he's a young man, and he's from Korea originally. But he's been in the U.S. for a while. He was brought here with his parents when he was a kid. And as an Asian person, has experienced some experiences of racist comments and people saying unpleasant things to him as he walks down the street or whatever, and feeling like there have been people who were prejudiced against him. And so when it came time to face an election where he felt like one side was more skewed toward racism and the other was skewed more toward inclusion, he had a preference. But then he looked around in his family, and his immediate family is Korean, but one of his siblings has married a Caucasian person from the South whose preference in the election was the opposite of what his was. And there started to be some really difficult conversations among the in-laws and the larger family group. And he said, "I was dreading Thanksgiving. It was not looking good for my family to get together for Thanksgiving because everybody was increasingly polarized." And he said, "I stopped and I decided that a moment of self-awareness was necessary." So he said, "I sat down and I thought, what am I feeling?" And he said, "What I'm feeling is anger at the angry people. And what I'm feeling is afraid of the fearful people. And that is not who I am. I don't like feeling that way." And Thomas, in that moment, empowered himself to feel differently than the response to the conditions were seeming to require of him. He said, "I decided I didn't have to feel that way. And I thought about who I truly am." And he said, "Who I truly am is a loving person. I don't want to sit here in fear. I don't want to sit here in anger. I don't want to dread Thanksgiving. I want to look forward to seeing these people and to know that they are perceiving life through their filter of reality and they are making the choices that are absolutely right for them." And so he said, in that moment, and he made this really expansive gesture, he said, "In that moment, I decided to love." And he decided to open his heart to everybody on all sides of the equation, recognizing that they have reasons for perceiving reality in the way that they do that are valid for them. And he hasn't walked a mile in their moccasins, and he's going to love them no matter what choices they're making, because loving is what he does, because he's a lover. And I sat there and I wanted to weep because I was so impressed with his empowerment of himself to make the decision about how he wants to show up in the world. And he wants to show up in the world as love itself. Not as judgment, not as criticism, not as fear, not as anger, but as love. I was just blown away because I wasn't at that place. The place where I was that day was practicing non-judgment. It's going to work out all right in the end. It's going to be okay no matter what happens. Abraham Hicks, one of my teachers, said, it doesn't matter who's in the White House, it matters where you vibrate. And Thomas was demonstrating that it didn't matter how people chose to view the world and the election, it mattered how he chose to feel and what action he wanted to take. And the action he wanted to take was to love. That was his action, was to open his heart to love under all of these strange circumstances. He could still love. And he proceeded to demonstrate that so clearly to me, because he went on what they call in the Abraham world a rampage of appreciation for the candidate he wasn't going to vote for. And he was able to see the value that other people were seeing in that person. So he was able to expand his perception of reality to include not only his perception, but these other people's perceptions and what they were seeing as valuable, and honor those perceptions and say, yeah, I get it. There's a reason why people see this as valuable. And not be pushing against, not be critical, but to be embracing, because there's value in everyone. And Science of Mind says, you know, we're all one. Ultimately, there's only one of us here. We are here expressing in a million different, a billion, multi-million different ways. But we are all one life, expressing in many, many different ways. So Thomas presented me with an example of how you can empower yourself to choose no matter what the conditions are. And the teacher who teaches that the most that I know of is Abraham Hicks. And they have this book called The Astonishing Power of Emotions. So that day I texted David and said, I'm going to change the topic of my talk in November. I'm going to talk about Abraham Hicks's book, The Astonishing Power of Emotions, and the choices that we have to empower ourselves to feel differently under different circumstances. And I reread this book in the last few weeks. And when I read this book, I've read 7 or 8 books that Jerry and Esther Hicks wrote from the teachings of Abraham. And when I read this book, I thought, this is the most important, valuable book they ever wrote. Hardly anybody's ever read it. It was not the most popular of the Abraham books. And it's not the ones over the years they've recommended at their workshops. Usually they recommend the book called Ask and It Is Given, which is also a great book and was my favorite book before this one. But this book, I went to see Abraham in Philadelphia a couple of weeks ago, and that day they recommended this book. They said, if you only read one of our books, read this book. So I felt really validated because I thought, that's the book I chose to talk about. So cool, I'm on track. And I love getting signals from the universe that I'm on track. So I read the book, and I made notes in the book about how this related to what Thomas demonstrated, because what the book is about is what Thomas demonstrated that day at my house. And so I broke it down, and I noticed that there were actually 9 things that Thomas did that day that helped me see how to make this process work for me. So the first one was that Thomas's overriding intention as a person is to be a loving person in the world. That's who he believes he is most powerfully. That's who he believes he is. The second thing he did was he noticed how he was actually feeling. He wasn't feeling loving. He wasn't feeling the way he wanted to feel. He was feeling angry or fearful. And in noticing that he was feeling angry or fearful, He was using what Abraham calls his emotional guidance system. And so let me talk about that just a little bit, how Abraham sees the emotional guidance system. Because what they say is, if you feel negative emotion, you are seeing life differently than your source sees it. So if you're feeling angry, then you're differing from how source feels, because whoever you're angry at, source loves them. And if you don't love them, you feel negative emotion. And that's your guidance saying, you being angry in this moment isn't the way your source sees this situation. Now, angry usually feels better than fearful. And in Abraham's terminology, angry is better than fearful, because angry has more energy than fearful. People who are angry are empowered in their lives. They usually become perpetrators, but they are doing something and feel energized in life. They don't feel victimized and hopeless. So moving from fear to anger is a good thing, but you don't want to get stuck in anger. You want to move up the emotional scale, because anger, even if it feels better than being victimized, doesn't really feel good. What feels good is feeling loving or feeling joyful or feeling happy or laughing. Those things are the things that really feel good in life. But feeling angry feels better than feeling victimized. So you move through anger on your way somewhere else. It's not an end point in itself. That's how the emotional guidance system works. And when you have the opportunity to say, I feel angry, that means I'm not seeing this as source sees it. How does source see it? It gives you the opportunity to ask the question. And when you feel victimized, that doesn't feel good, when you feel fearful. So how does source see that? Source sees you as powerful. So when you feel disempowered, you feel bad because you're not seeing yourself as source sees you. So we're kind of getting the idea that we have a choice. We not only have to react to conditions, that's how we've been taught mostly in life. This condition is bad, so I'm going to feel angry or fearful. But I have a choice. I don't have to be jerked around by the condition. I can make a different choice. I can think my way through this, and I can find another way to look at it that feels better. I can broaden my perception of it so that I can see it the way source sees it, or at least get closer to the way source sees it. So he then turned his attention to who he really is, a lover. And Thomas is committed to bringing more love into the world. That's powerful. And so I went through this book and I came up with a lot of places where Abraham explained to me the choices Thomas made, and that was helpful to me. So I want to share some of those quotes with you. So Thomas noticed that he didn't feel like who he really was, a lover. And what Abraham said is, this is who you truly are. You are one who loves. And when for whatever reason you do not love, you are tearing yourself apart. The way I say it when I talk to clients is, when I judge what is as wrong, I break my own heart. When I judge what is as wrong, I break my own heart. Because there is some reason that what is. And I don't understand it a lot of the time. I have no clue why what is. But that doesn't mean there isn't a reason for it. So Abraham went on to say, we understand you feel justified in your anger or hatred, whether the subject of your discomfort is your sister or an evil dictator or someone who loved you and left you. But no matter what, there is simply no justification for anything other than love and appreciation. The price you pay in your discord is far too great a price to pay. In our view, nothing justifies disconnection from self. So that's a lot to take in. It's something huge to ask of us, to not get jerked around by the conditions around us, but to make another choice to be the one who loves, and to recognize that for whatever reason, when we do not love, we tear ourselves apart. It's something we're doing internally. Now, they talk about the price you pay for your discord. And what they say is that we are ever given everything in life. We are given health. We are given wealth. We are given well-being. We are given love. We are given joy and stuff. There is an endless stream of well-being to come to us. But when we live in discord, we block it. Our resistance prevents all the good from coming to us. So that's the price we pay. When we're basking in love and appreciation, we are open and receptive to all the good that would flow to us otherwise. But when we're in resistance and we're pushing against something we perceive as wrong or bad or powerful over us, if we feel disempowered, we are blocking the good that would be there otherwise. So that's what Abraham said about that. And then they went on to say something else that was very powerful a few pages later. They said, "I take full responsibility for the way I feel at all times. I have the power to direct my thoughts no matter what, in ways to keep me in alignment with who I really am and feeling good." So they were talking in theory here about somebody else. So that you're saying to somebody else, "So you are free to live your life in whatever way appeals to you, and I'll be fine. I love being with you, living with you, loving with you, but my happiness is my responsibility. I'm not making you responsible for my happiness, whether you are a candidate for president or a sister you're having an argument with or somebody on the street that cuts you off in traffic. You are not responsible for my happiness. I can't change the way you're behaving in this moment, but I don't have to be unhappy about the way you're behaving in this moment. The power is within me." That's a really, really awesome statement because it returns the power for my life to me. I am not in control of all of these conditions. I have no way of controlling these conditions. But I can control my response to these conditions. So that was all very good. But then how do you do that? I mean, really. Here you are. You're battered by what's happening. You feel overwhelmed. You feel upset. You feel like there's injustice going on. Whatever it is that you are feeling in this moment, how do I make another choice? Because I am in effect of these conditions. Well, so what did Thomas do? Number four, he focused on how he actually wanted to feel. He wanted to feel loving. And what he actually wanted to do, and what he wanted to do was love, no matter what was happening. And so he needed in that moment to expand his capacity to feel love unconditionally. And so how do you do that? How do you do that? So I wrote some books. And so I went to my book, and I was reading my book. This one I haven't published. This was the second or third one. I don't remember which one this came from, but just happened to be sitting on the table by my bedside. I love it when that happens. And I picked it up, and I was reading it. And I chat with the beloved, which is what I call God. I have conversations with the beloved. And so I said to the beloved, "I've always wanted to feel love and know how to love freely, but I got discouraged a lot of the time. And the Beloved said to me, "But you always continued your quest to find love." And I said, "Is the way of love the quest, B?" Called the Beloved B for short. They said, "The way of love is the dawning realization that love is omnipresent. It's delighting in every glimmer and sparkle that you notice. It's remembering that all the love is centered here with you and everywhere else all at once. The way of love is allowing yourself to feel deeply the presence of the Beloved in your life. You are expanding your awareness into the spacious knowing that we have always been here with you, as we are each time you pick up your pen and say, 'Hi, B, now.'" They said, the way of love is tuning to love, turning to love, noticing when you're not feeling love and choosing to turn back to love. So what Thomas did was notice he wasn't loving, and he turned back to love. He tuned himself to love. I said, "Sometimes the way of love feels like a broad avenue where there's street festivals going on. There is music and laughter and great food and flowers and magic and clowns. Other times it feels like a very narrow path I might step off at any moment with sharp objects that I could trip over all around me." And B said, "The same path, different filter. The filter of fear turns a festival into an obstacle." I said, "I want to enjoy the festival. I have been enjoying the festival more and more. I'm grateful for your loving care, Beloved. I feel you influencing me, giving me impulses to go there and look here and listen to this as I tap more deeply into love." And so I feel like Thomas showed up for me as guidance for me in my path of love, to show me how to love in this circumstance where I wasn't feeling loving. So he did a really wonderful thing for me. And so then he showed me number 5. As he came into alignment with love itself, it was easy to feel love and appreciation beyond what he had set out to do, because he set out to love his family, and he ended up loving other people who were making choices different than his. That was powerful for me. And in this book, Astonishing Power of Emotion, Abraham talks about appreciating the contrast of these experiences where it looks terrible and you don't feel appreciation in this moment. Abraham said, "There can be no future expansion if your present is not asking for future solutions. And your present cannot ask for future solutions if there's not an existing problem. Your present cannot ask for a further answer without an existing question. In other words, the problems you wish to avoid are actually necessary for the expansion that you seek. And understanding that, it's possible to achieve a joyful rhythm of creation." So you don't have to push against the problem, because you can recognize that in the existence of the problem, a solution is being created. In the existence of the question, an answer is coming forward. And that was powerful. And then they addressed it a second time. They were talking to a person who expected a promotion at work, and somebody else got the promotion, and they were disappointed and upset about it. And they said, "An interesting way to approach this situation is, look at the person who received the promotion and feel glad it angered you so much. Because in the strong emotion you are feeling, it means that the creation of an improved working environment is strong within you. And then feel glad that you are aware of your anger and hurt feelings, for that means your guidance system is working, that this uncomfortable situation has been clarifying for you, and your vibrational escrow is bigger and better than before this all happened, and that you have the ability right now to choose to feel better, even in these circumstances." So you are empowered to feel better in spite of the contrast. In fact, you are empowering your future even in the presence or because of the presence of the contrast. That's a pretty powerful thing to get into your heart. That this thing that I didn't want to happen happened because there's something good for me here. And I can feel good about it now. I don't have to wait until I experience the good that's going to come out of it. I can trust. I can trust that the good's going to come out of it and it's going to be okay. So then Abraham said what Thomas did was soothe himself in these circumstances. He found ways to look at the situation that helped, that made him feel better. And what Abraham said is about that self-soothing exercise, and I'll give you some examples of what that looks like in a minute. But what they said, when you realize that a brief exercise like this is all you need to do at the time, you're on your way. Not only is it all you need to do, it's all you can do, but it's enough. You don't have to change the circumstances. You can't change the circumstances right now. But it's enough to soothe yourself and feel a little better. When you feel better, you've released resistance. And in the absence of resistance, a clear path lights up before you, which leads you step by step to the solutions that you seek. So in the absence of resistance, you hear your guidance and you are able to move forward. You can't move forward when you're not hearing your guidance because your guidance is telling you, punch that guy out that's really pissing you off. And that's not going to improve the situation because that's the guidance you get when you're angry or tell them off or make a fuss. But the self-soothing changes your receptivity to your guidance. So here's some things you can say to yourself that soothe you. It will be interesting to see how this plays out. I've been making more of this than it deserves. It's pretty funny how much I'm making of this. I like knowing I have the power to control my own feelings. No decision needs to be made today. There's plenty of time to figure it out. I know how it is. In one moment, there are no good ideas, and then the next moment, there's a good idea. Before an answer comes, it often feels like it will never come. And when the answer does arrive, you wonder why you doubted that it was coming. So now you're already feeling better, even with this short amount of self-soothing. So new ideas may flow to you. Abraham continued to say, it's our encouragement, however, that you resist the temptation to jump into action too soon. Because the better you feel before you jump into action, the more appropriate the action will be and the more positive the outcome you will receive. So talk yourself up the emotional scale. Move from fear to anger to non-judgment to appreciation to love. Take those steps. Take all the steps before you take the action. Don't go off partway through the process. Just keep soothing yourself until you feel better. So that process of self-soothing empowers you and gives you the opportunity to move forward. And Abraham said, focus is everything. Nothing brings out the worst in another faster than focusing upon the worst about them. Nothing brings out the best in another faster than focusing on the best in them. So whatever it is you focus on, you're going to get more of it. And you get to choose what you focus on. So there's empowerment in that. And then they said, the awareness that you do not need the agreement of any other to create what you desire is truly liberating. And when you're no longer including the opposing thoughts of others into your vibrational mix, your power of influence increases powerfully. So you are more powerful in your love than you are in your anger or your fear. And you change the consciousness of the people around you in your love. So if you're focusing on love and appreciation, you are more powerful. And then the last thing I want to say, it's almost time to finish up. The last thing I want to say is number nine. This is for me. This is not what I got from Thomas. And the rule that I try to follow is I don't know what anybody else is thinking. And when I'm upset about what they're doing, I'm making stuff up about what they're thinking. I'm saying they're doing this and that means. And I'll give you a really fun example because I've been dealing with this all week. I met a man online and I've been emailing with him and texting with him and talking to him on the phone. I haven't talked to him in person yet. But when I talked to him in email on Friday and Saturday last week, he said, I don't have time to answer this right now. I'll get back to you tomorrow. And then I didn't hear from him again until Wednesday. So I had the opportunity to make up a lot of stuff about why he didn't email me when he said he was going to. And I went through a lot of emotions. I went through frustration and impatience and anger and annoyance before I got to curiosity. I wonder what this could mean about who he is. He doesn't do what he says he's going to do, or he doesn't care about emailing me back. And then I thought, maybe it means something entirely different. So I had the opportunity to make up stuff because I had like 5 days in waiting for him to get back to me to make up stuff. But I finally decided that if I'm going to make up stuff, I'm going to make up stuff that feels good. So I observed that he's an engineer and he's a successful businessman and he was involved in a big project. And so I made up that he is a very powerful focuser and he can only focus on one thing at a time. So when he's focused on business, nothing else enters his mind. And when he's focused on me, he's very attentive. The times when he was attending to me, he was writing me multi-page letters. So he was attending to me when he was attending to me, but he was attending to something else when he was not attending to me. That felt better to me. So by the time I got to feeling better, lo and behold, I got an email from him. And we ended up talking on the phone. And so we had this fabulous conversation on Friday night. He said, I'll call you tomorrow. And yesterday he didn't call me. So I felt like I was in junior high again. I have this opportunity to be disappointed or angry or questioning, you know, he doesn't do what he says he's going to do or he doesn't really want to talk to me. But I thought, no, those things don't feel good. And I've been through this once before. So I know he's focused somewhere else. And I actually checked it out with him. I said, this is what I made up about you. Is this true? And he said, 80%. So I said, 80% is pretty high. Chances are he's focused somewhere else. And that's okay. Because I don't need him to focus on me. I've got a life. You know, I got other stuff to do. I just don't want to be sitting by the phone waiting for him to call if he's not going to call. And so I got feeling good about it, and I thought, what could I do? I could be curious. I could be curious about when he is going to show up, because we had a really good time on the phone Friday night. He's probably going to show up again. Or I could be unconditionally loving and just have a good day and savor this moment, because this is a great day. I had figs off my fig tree for breakfast this morning. I mean, how good is life when you can go out and pick figs for your breakfast right off the tree? Fresh figs are pretty exciting, and I don't have to wait for phone calls to eat fresh figs and feel good about them. So that was really good. And so I texted him this morning, and I said, I'm eating fresh figs, and life is good. And he texted me back, and I said, I'll call you this afternoon. And I said, I'm really busy today. I hope we have time to connect. But I don't need him to call. And I feel good regardless of the circumstances. And so this whole thing with the astonishing power of emotions demonstrated to me that I don't need somebody else to behave in a certain way for me to feel good. Even when I'm in junior high mode, I have a choice. And that feels really good to me. So I'm grateful. I'm grateful for Thomas. I'm grateful for this guy for giving me reasons to not feel good and giving me the opportunity to empower myself to feel good anyway. I'm even grateful for this election because it's giving me the opportunity to empower myself to feel good, to feel loving, to feel grateful that our culture provides me with choices. I get to choose, and other people get to choose, and everybody's doing the best they can. And one of the things I say to myself often is, people can't give you what they ain't got. And so if you spend your life asking people to give you what they ain't got, you're going to have a really unhappy life. But you can be happy even when they can't give you what they ain't got. Cool. I mean, that's like the best news there is for me. So I'm really happy that I have this study group to come and challenge me to talk about something, and that it always stretches me into a new place and a new opportunity to empower myself to have a happy life. And so I'm going to be happy today, and I invite you to do the same.